The following content is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, enjoy articles to help you improve your green thumb. And now, here's NCRS volunteer Cindy Fowler.
We will start with the 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden by Reader's Digest, with things to do in your garden for June. For trees and shrubs, prune to control the shape of evergreen shrubs and hedges. Monitor leaves for signs of wilting and water plants if the ground is dry. Control spider mites or junipers by spraying with an insecticidal soap. And take cuttings for propagation from both evergreen and deciduous shrubs. If you have annuals, plant to fill gaps in the beds or to replace plantings that have failed. Weed, water, fertilize as needed. Watch for signs of pests and disease. Deadhead for extended flowering. And cut flowers early in the morning for longer-lasting arrangements. Perennials and bulbs. Start seeds for fall planting. Weed, water, fertilize as needed. Deadhead, or cut back perennials after flowering to promote plant vigor and rebloom. Deadhead bulb flowers to prevent seed formation. Watch for signs of pests and diseases, especially during humid weather. For your roses, watch for aphids, Japanese beetles, spider mites, thrips, and fungal diseases. Spray as needed. Water deeply and weekly in dry weather, twice a week if very hot. Prune spring-blooming old garden roses after the main flush of flowers ends. Prune climbers, removing any old or fallen canes and tying in new canes as replacements. For your vegetables and herbs, watch for powdery mildew fungus on squash and cucumbers. Watch for insect pests like stink bugs and spider mites. This is the big harvest season. Pick early in the morning. If eggplants or cucumbers are bitter, it's a sign of plant stress. Keep watering and fertilizing as needed. For your tomatoes, seed the fall tomato crop using early maturing and cherry types. This is the end of the season. Pick what's left while still half green to limit insect and bird damage. Watch for leaf-footed stink bugs, spider mites, leaf spot, and fruit rot. For your lawns, maintain a good mowing and watering schedule to keep the grass healthy, and leave the grass clippings on the lawn. Apply post-emergent herbicides as needed to control annual weeds. Watch for signs of fungus disease and insect damage. Apply the proper controls at the recommended rates. And give Bermuda grass a light application of slow-release fertilizer and dethatch Bermuda grass anytime through July. For your patio and container plants, monitor plants daily for water needs and pest control. Apply water-soluble fertilizer or foliar feed to plants as needed for healthy vigor, usually every 2 to 4 weeks. Pinch back straggly plants and deadhead spent blooms to maintain a neat appearance. Replace seasonal and failed plants as needed. Now from the News and Observer by Nancy Brakey. If daffodils disappointed you, take action now. One topic never fails to generate mail this time of year: daffodils that did not bloom. By this time, gardeners are getting over their disappointment and are determined to do something about it. Well, the time is now. With daffodil foliage turning yellow, the plants are going dormant, and this is the opportunity to do something about crowded or misplaced daffodils. By misplaced, I mean daffodils that do not get enough sunlight to generate buds and blooms. That is one reason for poor or non-existent bloom, and they should be moved. By crowded, I mean bulbs that have grown for some years in the same place and are now a dense thicket of leaves but no flowers. These are ripe to be dug, divided, and replanted over the next few weeks. Daffodils get crowded because of the natural development of the bulbs below ground, which tends to make fewer and smaller blooms. Prepare to dig. Doing this work now means you can see, thanks to the yellow or brown foliage, exactly where the bulbs are in the ground. Waiting to do this in midsummer means you may not be as certain where they are as you prepare to dig. You could mark the area with golf tees or the narrow plastic tags that often accompany bedding plants. The goal is to dig just outside the bulb's area so you do not risk piercing them with spade, shovel, or fork. Damp soil is also helpful because the soil is softer and easier to dig. If rain is forecast, wait for it. Have newspaper or a cardboard box handy to set the clumps in once you get them out of the ground and shake off as much soil as possible. Gardeners are often surprised that an individual bulb has multiplied into several of varying sizes. This explains the crowding that you saw above ground. With the bulbs on newspaper or in a shallow box, gently separate the bulbs by pulling the younger, newer ones away from the mother bulbs. Then trim away any lingering foliage. You may have a surprising number. Separate them by size into groups of small, medium, and large. Replant bulbs. Depending on the space you have, choose the bigger bulbs, which will produce flowers fastest. Then decide on the medium-sized ones and choose the best among them, but they will likely need a couple of years to produce flowers. Unless you have a lot of time and space to devote to this project, I would not mess with the tiny bulbs, which would take several years to bloom. Replant the bulbs 6 to 8 inches deep in well-drained soil. They must have full sun. Some of you have asked about digging the bulbs now and replanting in the fall, as we do with newly purchased bulbs. You can do this fairly easily. After you dig, divide, and clean the bulbs, let them dry naturally for a day or two. Then store them in a shallow cardboard box. Keep them in a cool, dry place through the summer. Now ask Nancy, what is the name of a houseplant that I can keep in my office and that does not get too big for my desk? It is fairly dim. Please don't suggest philodendron, because I think it is boring. Answer. As a starter plant for your office garden, consider the pothos, sometimes called devil's ivy. It is a trailing plant that grows reasonably fast in low light and brings no problems with it. Chinese evergreen is a beautiful house plant with interesting coloration on the foliage. With either plant, let the soil dry out between watering. And from State by State Gardening, Easy Vegetables by Patrick Byers. The following group of vegetables is suggested for ease of culture and positive chances for success. Radishes are the ultimate in instant gratification. You plant the seed, pull up the tasty roots in 30 days or less. Radishes are a great introduction to vegetables for children. Plant the seeds early spring and late summer for two harvests. Good cultivars include Cherry Bell, Champion, White Icicle, and Easter Egg. Remember, radishes are cool season vegetables. Seeds planted too late in the spring may not produce the hoped-for roots. Loose leaf lettuce comes in many forms: green, bronze, oak leaf, and deer tongue, to name a few. Gardeners can plant individual cultivars or blend several for variety. Lettuce is a cool season vegetable, so plant at the proper time for your region. Rather than pulling up entire plants for harvest, as for head lettuce, pick individual leaves from plants to prolong the bounty. Loose leaf lettuce cultivars include Black Seeded Simpson, Salad Bowl Green, Salad Bowl Red, and Oak Leaf. Onions come in three colors, white, yellow, and red, and are commonly planted early spring. Cultivars like Sweet Spanish, Walla Walla, Texas Super Street, Super Sweet, and Granix are available as sets, small bulbs, or small plants. Planted a bit close, extra plants may be pulled and enjoyed as green onions. Mature bulbs are ready to harvest when the tops die back. Potatoes are another great vegetable for children. Plant seed potato pieces, each with at least one eye, in early spring. The harvest begins with new potatoes, dug when plants begin to blossom. Mature potatoes are ready for digging when the plants die back. White-skinned cultivars include Kennebec, Irish Cobbler, and Yukon Gold. Red-skinned cultivars include Norland and Pontiac. Russet-skinned cultivars include Russet Burbank and Norgold Russet. From Dave's Garden, Strange Fruit, Wild Tomato Varieties for Your Garden by Shannon McKee. Always planting the same old tomatoes? Time to spice things up. Here are some good ones to consider. Chocolate Cherry. This cherry tomato variety is the color of port wine and bears a hint of chocolate. For such small fruit, these tomatoes have an awfully big taste. They're best served fresh and are ideal for making salads and canning. Yellow Pear. Yellow pear plants produce sunny little teardrop-shaped tomatoes, so their name seems more than appropriate. These fun fruits have a mild taste and are great for popping right into your mouth when you harvest them. Alternatively, they can be eaten as tomato preserves. Sun Gold. Sun Gold is another variety that produces smaller fruits, all of which are lovely orange cherry-type tomatoes. They have a rather sweet taste and can thrive well past the end of the growing season. Sun Golds are perfect for eating right off the vine or for adding some color to your salads. Candy's Old Yellow, another yellow variety. These tomatoes are large, flat, and sweet-tasting. Their crazy, irregular shape makes them a lot of fun to grow. Try throwing some of these into a chutney or a sweeter salsa. Green zebra. Green zebras are gloriously striped green fruits that usually bear a yellow or bluish-red tint. With an average weight of 6 ounces, these are relatively small. Some may worry they won't be able to tell when their green zebras have ripened, but the trick is to wait until the stripes turn a deeper shade of yellow. These tomatoes have a tart taste and can be enjoyed fresh by anyone who is not a fan of sweeter varieties. They also work well in canning recipes because of their slight acidity. Pineapple heirloom. This giant beefsteak tomato is bicolored yellow and red. It has a mild but tropically sweet flavor to it. These can grow to massive sizes on the vine and work wonderfully for slicing thanks to their meaty flesh. Plus, you can use these giants in your canning recipes. Striped German. These large, gorgeous-looking tomatoes are known for their green and red stripes. Inside, they're marbled. Striped Germans are sweet and can easily be sliced up to eat fresh. Unfortunately, it tastes so good that it often doesn't last long enough to make it into your meals. Mr. Stripey. Like Striped German, Mr. Stripey is a two-tone tomato. The only difference is that this red and yellow striped fruit has a thick beefsteak feel to it. Mr. Stripeys have a high sugar content, giving them a sweet flavor. Still, they taste great on salads and sandwiches and in sweet sauces. Cherokee Purple, another aptly named variety, as they turn a beautiful shade of mahogany purple when ripe. Cherokee Purples are large and very beefy. If you're looking for the perfect slicing tomato, this one's for you. This can be eaten fresh, added to your salsa recipes, and canned. Black Krim, K-R-I-M. Black Krim is a Russian variety that takes on a deep maroon color when ripe. These tomatoes are medium-sized and, you guessed it, beefsteak-like. Black Krims have a rich flavor that you won't soon forget. Some describe them as having a salty taste, making them the right choice for anyone that loves salt but wants to stay away from sodium. Brandywine Pink. Brandywine Pink plants produce large, delightful, pinkish-red tomatoes. You can expect these to slice well and taste divine. They have a rather sweet flavor and will make the perfect addition to your burgers and picnic sandwiches. Castelluto Genovese. This red-fluted tomato is an Italian heirloom that's been around quite a while. Their deep ribbing gives them a unique shape. Castelluto Genovese have an intense flavor and can be eaten fresh or thrown into your favorite recipes. You should be able to find some of these varieties at your local nursery. For others, you may have to order seeds or seedlings from a mail-order garden company. It's always fun to try out new varieties and discover some awesome new flavors. You might even find that your kids love yellow pears for their sunny color, or that you cannot get enough of Cherokee Purple. This year, make it a point to grow one or two new tomato varieties in your garden. A lot of heirlooms are finally making a comeback, and it is time to give them a try. Now from Garden Smarts by Shelley Goldblum. Newspaper mulches. One year, I tried mulching my potato field with newspaper instead of hay, recalls Jimenez, New Mexico, wrencher R.J. Bootson. It was bad news. When the top papers dried, the wind blew it all over the pasture. And then in the fall, the blobby wet papers did not mulch into the ground as well as the hay did. Farmer Leanne Bullman of Independence, Wisconsin, uses grass clippings to hold down the layers of newspaper so the wind does not blow them away. I always hated to weed, and I no longer have to, says La Crosse, Wisconsin, cobbler Patty Emery. I scrape back about an inch of the topsoil and spread newspapers in layers of 3 sheets, sprinkle the topsoil back over the paper, the newspaper disintegrates, and you lose no topsoil. And this article is by Bonnie L. Grant, and it's titled Pocket Gardens. Pocket gardens allow you the opportunity to brighten a space with living plants in underutilized spaces. Special, unexpected pops of color and texture can soften even the sparest spaces, and all you need is a little bit of soil and a niche of space. Pocket garden design is a fun way to get creative with your unique space and enliven previously flat, boring parts of the outdoors. Here's some pocket garden information to get you started on developing your own unique style in the landscape. What is a pocket garden? The pocket garden is a design technique that has been used by gardeners for generations, but it has recently found a chic standing in the landscape world. What is a pocket garden? It can be a combination of scenarios, but the basic point is to add plants in small, unexpected ways to the landscape. Gardening can be a challenge in small spaces or in areas with little area for a garden plot or bed. This is when it's time to look outside the box and get creative with what you do have. One design strategy is creating pocket gardens. The premise is that you can tuck a plant, or two or three, almost anywhere. Planting some attractive greenery down stone stairs, nestling a few succulents between pavers, or even selecting some complementary flora that can be popped in the edges of a patio are all examples of pocket gardening. Dish gardens, containers, and hanging plants are also part of the pocket plan. Creative accessories and unique containers can help make the space special and distinctive to you. Pocket garden information. The first step to a pocket garden is to look around the space and consider the challenges and assets. Lighting, ability to provide water, theme, and many other considerations need to come into play. In most cases, maintenance will be an issue. Choose low-maintenance plants that can sustain themselves without much intervention. Succulents, alpine plants, some grasses, and spurge are excellent choices. The feel that you are trying to achieve is important, but so are plant needs. Use plants that have similar requirements in the small space for best results. An example might be a niche planting of clumping bamboo with containers of succulents as accents in a patio setting. The choices are endless, but the best pocket garden will have complementary textures and plant needs. Getting started with pocket garden design. Pocket gardens can be as simple as several matching planters of ornamental grasses along the driveway to succulents tucked into the rock wall that abuts a path. It's about creating interest where there was just man-made space. More intricate pocket design requires individual small beds among stonework or installed as part of the patio space. This does not require a professional, unless you are not up to building such accents. You can use containers to the same effect. Creating pocket gardens is an opportunity to express your individuality and refresh a space. You can even pocket garden a small herb garden outside the kitchen or a bed of colorful varietal lettuces. The mini garden spaces should suit your vision and purpose while providing plants with similar soil and cultivation requirements. And now from the Wonder Baby website. This article is Gardening with a Blind Child by Amber Bobnar. For those of us who live in parts of the world with seasons, there are really only a few months out of the year where you can go outside and plant a garden. And if you like to plant flowers and vegetables, then it is also your best chance to have your children learn about plants, dirt, and gardening. Children with visual impairments need the opportunity to get their hands into as many different projects as possible, and gardening has the added benefit of being one of those extremely hands-on activities. So let's all get outside and get our hands dirty. What blind kids can learn in the garden? Being outdoors, listening to the birds, and feeling the sunshine are benefit enough for a lot of kids. Also, feeling like they are part of a larger family project can give many kids a boost of confidence. But there are other learning opportunities you might want to focus on in your garden. Learn about plants. Talk to your child about how plants grow and what they need to grow. It may seem silly, but we read Sesame Street Library In the Garden to Ivan as a way to talk about plants. The book explains that seeds need dirt, water, and sun to grow. Yeah, it's pretty simple, but it gets the point across, and the book even plays sounds. This was a fun and silly way to introduce the concept of gardening to our son. Learn about clean and dirty. It's inevitable that you will get dirty in the garden, and that's a good thing.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Out in the Garden on the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.